The choices you make with your lifestyle, your money, every single day influence your future. Become informed. Act with purpose. Build your tomorrow. This podcast is dedicated to sharing ideas that you can use to take ownership of your financial future. Most Americans have little or no net worth. By being purposeful with what we earn, I believe we can change that. Welcome to Money is Personal, the Briggs Financial Podcast. Salutations, greetings, and hello. My name is Stephen Briggs. I am the owner of Briggs Financial. Welcome to Money is Personal, episode number 20, having the talk with your parents. Now, we're not talking about that talk or maybe when we were teenagers, but as Gen Xers and the beginning of the millennial generation we're getting older, our parents and our parents' friends and whatnot are also starting to get older, and they're starting to hit that golden age and those golden years of their life. And with that comes some interesting challenges. Some of these things and some of the conversations that can start to crop up as our parents age, depending on how you've planned things out or haven't planned things out, as most people find, it can be really, really intimidating and it can be very difficult. So that when things get intimidating and difficult, this is where I often turn to expertise to be able to speak on these sort of things. And I have found one such individual. This is Jacqueline Boyd, who is the owner and founder of The Care Plan. Jacqueline, welcome to Money is Personal.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us about what The Care Plan is, how you founded the company, what your kind of mission is, and what are you working on? What do you do?
Absolutely. Well, I founded the company 3 years ago with the goal of demystifying the aging process for people and helping individuals and families just increase their quality of life in that last quarter of life. So in my career, I had been in health and aging in a number of different ways, and mm-hmm. It felt like every family I worked with was reinventing the wheel. They were going from having their loved one be a healthy, relatively independent adult to needing maybe housing or caregiver support or this whole new terrain that the families have no education around. Mm-hmm. It's all new language and lingo. It's a new financial picture.
All right.
And there's just so little planning done. So my company is called The Care Plan, and we do everything from assisting people with addressing long-term care issues, so making a care plan for months or years in the future, to really walking with families and individuals in crisis now. So, you know, mom or dad had a fall, somebody's getting out of the hospital, we have an unexpected diagnosis, that changes your life. So having a guide Absolutely. In that process or a coach, it relieves a lot of stress and anxiety.
Well, that just sounds incredible. And as you noted there, it is a foreign roadmap. You get used growing up to relying on your parents and them kind of being the bedrock and everything from learning how to walk to baby being that shoulder you cried on when you got dumped for the first time, or you got good grades or bad grades. You threw the touchdown pass, or you blew the shot at the end of the game, or whatever it was. Your parents have always kind of been there for you. And now, you know, and sometimes, as you said, in a pretty dynamic fashion, you know, that table can flip really quickly depending on, you know, what happens here. Right. So it's, I can imagine that's, it ends up being quite a challenge people face when that table does get flipped, you know, in that way.
And I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I think that most people still have that lens on when they're dealing with their parents. And so this topic of having the talk, it's really about starting to talk. You know, it's changing that dynamic and approaching your parents from a place of neutrality and support, rather than some of the family dynamics that evolve over time, right? Where you're kind of, you know, waiting for your parents' permission or respecting their authority. But when the ability to live on their own and manage their lives changes, it needs to change the dynamic. And we need to not view ourselves just as the children anymore, but really changing those roles.
So let's talk about changing that dynamic then. So, I'll even give an example that came up with me really recently in the last couple of days. My dad and I were just talking about my parents' retirement savings, and I had, as he was talking through what was going on, I had not even telling him what to do or anything like that, but just kind of suggested, hey, I haven't run the numbers on this, but have you considered a particular strategy? And he immediately got very defensive, got very upset suddenly about it. And so I backed off pretty quickly and said, oh, no, not a big deal. No, I'm not double questioning you here. Now, thankfully, while my dad was very, very upset in that moment, a couple of days later, I got a phone call from him saying that he had taken a look at that. And that was, he thought, actually, this is a pretty good idea. I should have considered this a while ago. But here I am, financial planner and professional, and I caused a volcanic explosion of uncanny proportion. I did not expect going into that with my mere suggestion, which I thought I had padded enough. But there's a lot of emotion surrounding this conversation, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And I think, we try to approach our parents as parents in these very, very vulnerable topics. Things around money are always sensitive, and nobody wants to talk about their health. And we're really socialized not to share those things and to be very private and to figure it out ourselves, and around health to not be a burden to other people. So that's what's going on for your parents, for your loved ones, anybody you're trying to have those conversations with. So I've learned over the years that the best way to have those conversations is to plan for them and to let it be a casual conversation, but one that you're directing. So it's a long game, not a short game. So if you and I had talked about that ahead of time, I'd suggest, really what you're trying to do is give your dad financial advice, which, even though that's your job, he may not see you that way. He sees you as his kid, and what are you doing over
without
telling me what to do with my money?
I'm at least thankful he circled the wagons eventually, because I was trying as softly as possible to say, almost make it his idea, and I just didn't get there. He saw right through that ploy and took me to task immediately.
Yes, he did.
And go ahead.
Well, I was just going to dive a little deeper, because what I try to do now, whether it's my parents or when I'm coaching, adult children on how to have these conversations with their parents, give it time. Give them the advance notice to think about it and to see you in a different light. So for you, I would have said, something like, Dad, there's a strategy that I want to talk with you about sometime. I wonder if you'd, just listen to me on it. And if we can, talk through some things, I think it might be helpful for you, but I really want to get your read on it, so that you're allowing your parent to still be helpful in the process and not the one that needs help. Does that make sense?
It sure does.
And you're saying, we're not going to talk about this now. It's just an idea. I'll talk with you about it later. And that really allows people the time to choose to have that conversation and to come to that conversation ready to have it. So, the hot button issues that I see a lot are even more urgent than that. It's like, Mom, you're not paying the bills right. I need to get involved in this. Or, I'm worried about what will happen to you. Do you have your will done? Can I have a copy? Those are big issues. But the same protocol applies. Give it time, drop it as an idea first, and schedule a time to actually have the conversation. Because people need to get ready for that. You're not asking about, what do you want for dinner? You're asking, what are you doing with the rest of your life?
Well, sure. And I think one of the things, and I think it bears repeating in this, is that what you intend to say and how it is received are two entirely different things. For example, when I said, hey, have you thought about doing this type of conversion? Now, for me, I was just kind of thinking off the top of my head and very much intentioned on, we don't have to figure this out today. Mm-hmm. That is not how it was taken, though.
Nope.
So you almost have to really be deliberate about, just having a real game plan for the language you're using, being very deliberate about not putting someone on the spot, even when you have no intention of putting them on the spot.
Right, right. And it is so, I think communication around this stuff is endlessly interesting because we get used to talking to our parents in a certain way. And so you think, okay, I can be casual about this. There's decades of trust here. Your dad's still not quite ready. You know, you have to build trust on those particular subjects.
Well, and what was interesting here is my dad and I have talked about investments together before. We had a very colloquial conversation until we got to that one.
Mm-hmm.
And so yep. When you have, and I think, the difference between strategy and long-term, but at the end of the day, he simply wasn't prepared to answer that question. And
right.
Given that he had put his own thought into that, for me to suggest the line of action he hadn't considered, given how much time he had put into it, flustered him. It was very clearly flustered him. So we have to be real careful, don't we, in those situations?
Absolutely. And I really recommend to folks, because whether it's about finances or anything else, these subjects are tied to emotions. And so your parents, exactly, you were coming to it with the best of intentions. But you can still get shut down. And then sometimes that door closes and you don't get to go through it again. You know, if that had gone a certain way and your dad was like, no, he's trying to know too much about my business. He's trying to tell me what to do. And I'm your father. You don't get to tell me that. There are people that go that direction.
Mm-hmm.
So I encourage people to start early with these conversations, allow it to take the time it needs to take. You know your parent. If they're not going to respond to something well on the spot, don't do it. Say, let's talk about this in a month. Get back to me.
Well, and at the same time, if you do accidentally trip over a wire like I did, the quickness of my feet to backpedal out of that situation was rapid. It's important that even when, if your parents at that point end up getting very upset, that you're still keeping your cool about it and going, all right, I have approached this wrong or at a wrong time. I can back out of the conversation just as quickly as I entered it.
yep, exactly. And that's so smart of you. That's exactly, if you can tell that somebody's not prepared to have that conversation, it does not need to happen today.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say the specific pieces of language I want to help people be aware that they should stay away from are words like need and help. The minute you say those words to your parents, they are more than likely going to shut down or they're going to resent you. So I always try to position things to my parents and to my clients' parents in a way that is about helping me or helping the child. So for example, with my dad, it's taken me 10 years to get him to actually write down a will, do his power of attorney and advance directives. The only way he started to have that conversation with me was I said, Dad, I know that you really, really care about me and the rest of the kids. If we don't have this conversation, it's going to be a burden on me. We know that eventually this is going to be an issue and I want to be sure that your legacy is protected. You get to choose when we have that conversation. You get to choose how it happens. But I know you don't want to be a burden to me. And so we need to have the conversation, so sort of approaching it in a way that's reasonable, not about what they have to do or that they need help, but listen, you're helping me out by getting this in order.
That's an incredible way of putting it. And I think most of us intend to be in that sort of mind frame, but it's another thing to actually have those words. That's an incredibly powerful statement there. What are some other tips you may have in terms of, so we're looking to broach this conversation. If we have a parent that's particularly independent, other tips on how we can be communicating with them to, hopefully, whether it's introducing that or being in that conversation, that it's constructive and supportive of our parents, and draws as little animosity as possible.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that in addition to what I've said, keeping it natural, you know, making sure that you're not acting like this is a big conversation. Like, this is just, we're all getting older. I'm thinking about it for myself. So of course I'm thinking about it for you, mom or dad. We just lost aunt or uncle or grandma or grandpa. And so this is fresh on everybody's mind. We know what didn't go well the first time. Let's make sure that we're in control of our aging process. So I try to, you know, like I said, give people time, but to sort of have a checklist for yourself of what you need to know, the information you want to gather, and then talk with the other people in your family that it makes sense to talk with. So if you're thinking about having these conversations and you have 2, 3, 4 other siblings, talk with them first, because chances are everybody has a different relationship with your parents. So they'll have ideas you haven't had. They'll have observations you haven't had. Mm-hmm. They'll have concerns that you might not have. So getting on the same page, because the other thing that happens in a lot of families is maybe the first kid tries to have this conversation, then the second kid is kind of bullying the parent into having these conversations, and the third kid. So they feel a lot of pressure. Whereas if you figure it out as a unit first, you can say, okay, kid A is going to talk to dad about finances. Kid B is going to talk to mom about housing and what they want that to look like in the future. Mm-hmm. And kid C is going to talk about advanced directives in 5 months, not do anything now, you know, so you can split it up almost like, I encourage people to think about this like you do a job. Same way mm-hmm. you project manage a job, project manage your folks and their aging process, and think about it as, you know, how would I treat a client or a customer in this situation? You wouldn't be bringing a lot of emotion. You don't spring things on people, and you give them the education to make informed decisions and let them know that it's their choice, not yours.
Now, the project management aspect of this. So, you know, many of our listeners will have, you know, be sitting there thinking, oh goodness, there's a lot of stuff here. And we haven't even scratched some of it yet, but all right, just even the emotional point of view, things can be very polarizing, especially if there's a lot of history. But you also brought up the management side going, well, I got kids of my own and a household of our own, or maybe I own a business where I'm in a role in my company that I'm pulled 7 different directions. I have to take the kids to practice. And oh, by the way, here's this on top of it. Right. The immediate thought is I need help. Mm-hmm. Like, is there a point where you say, I can't do this on my own. So what does getting help, what does that look like for someone when, you know, and what is the benefit of having someone who isn't a family member or related to anyone in this situation? What advantages does that provide?
Well, there's huge advantages, because I think if you look at any other phase of life or any other major life decision, so for example, buying a house, buying a vehicle, going back to school, retiring, we plan for all of those things. We do our research. It takes sometimes years to get to the point where you're ready to bite that bullet. Aging is no different. And so we should be planning for it over time, over the span of years. Most people, though, wait for that issue that comes up where then now you have to make a lot of changes. And so whether you're in that boat where your parents won't talk to you and now we're in an urgent situation, or you want to start having the conversations, having somebody like myself or a care manager involved is really a guide. It's a coach. It's training on how to do this well. Because like I said, there's no education. I could not walk into a courtroom and represent myself to any degree of success. But I can get anybody from, you know, from a place of confusion and high anxiety to a place of calm and peace around the aging process. Mm-hmm. 9.9 times out of 10, because that's been my area of expertise. So it's just mm-hmm. knowing that, resting easy, knowing you're making the right decisions, it cuts down on time as well. So for example, something like hiring caregivers, we get a lot of calls for that. And to do the searching for yourself and figure out what questions to ask and hire the right person that can be 15 to 20 hours of time. For our company, we do it in 2 to 3 hours. And so for a lot of folks, it's worth having somebody do that for you to relieve that stress of where am I going to get the extra time to do this process, if that makes sense.
Well, that's just an incredible savings in not just cost, but obviously also the potential quality of care as well, because you already know so much information that can just simply be filtered out and where to look for the right information. But I think the other, one of the other keys in all of this is, as you're talking through it, is even as you brought up examples, like you see someone that, that's special to buy a house between your real estate agent and your mortgage broker and the real estate lawyer and all of that, or getting married or, retirement and those other things, you get to make choices on most of that stuff. You don't have to buy the house today. Right. You don't have to buy the car tomorrow. But we don't get to choose when we get sick. We don't get to choose when our body ages, if certain things fall apart at certain times. Healthy people die young, and unhealthy people can die old, and everywhere in between. And we can play all the probabilities, but at the end of the day, we really don't know. Mm-hmm. And so when you don't know, it really does kind of throw this sort of specter of either you've gone through this process and have these things mapped out, or like you said, you get stuck with a whole lot of change in a whole lot of change in a really rapid succession that may not be what you actually what would have been optimal or what you really would have wanted if only you had tackled it a bit sooner.
And I think that's where a service like this makes all the difference, because people feel like aging is out of their control. And just like you said, I don't know when I'm going to get sick. How can I plan for that? I don't know if I'm going to get dementia. How can I plan for that? But we all have decisions that we can make. So for example, most people aren't thinking about retirement housing or skilled nursing care, long-term care, until they're in a hospital bed. And those places are $90,000 to $92,000 to even higher a year. $92,000 a year is the average in the state of Illinois for
a nursing home care
for a shared room. So we're not talking anything fancy. We're talking the basics. So for some people, that's what they spend on their house or less, if they're in their 70s or 80s.
Right.
So why are we waiting and only giving ourselves 24 to 48 hours to think about where you're going to live for the best end years of your life? Why aren't we thinking about that investment? Because it's one of the biggest investments you're going to make.
That's it. Yeah, without a doubt. And segueing into that a little bit, you brought up cost of care. It seems like healthcare and the cost of care is this sort of never-ending cycle upward, the spiraling tower up that seems to have sort of no end. What sort of costs are you seeing with respect to even just hiring a caregiver to help in the home, or what are some of the trends that you're seeing overall in those cost spaces?
Well, I'm definitely seeing costs going up, and there's a couple of reasons for that, but part of it is because there's been more attention brought over the last, I'd say 10 years to domestic workers and to protections for domestic workers. And this is happening across the country. And it started in urban areas. So in places like Chicago, where the minimum wage has gone up, that's necessitated an increase in pay for caregivers, for housekeepers, for folks that are doing a lot of this work in people's homes. And so right now, the cost for caregivers from an agency is anywhere from $22-$23 upwards of $30 an hour, depending on the agency, what their niche is. There's some agencies that, only hire people with a college degree. There's some agencies that only hire CNAs. So those are the kinds of things that I help people work through, because it's hard to know if you're making the right decisions. And most people are in a stressful situation when they're trying to figure this out. But the cost of care are rising. One of the tools that was out, a financial tool that was out a few decades ago, long-term care insurance, That has gotten a lot more complicated and a lot less generous.
Well, yeah, I mean, I know states, to provide a little context on that, I know that from a state and federal standpoint, one of the biggest reasons why that was allowed to be a product was, you know, the generosity that you saw in some of those initial insurance offerings was broad enough where they went, hey, this could be a long-term solution as a supplement to Medicare. And the problem is a number of those companies just went bankrupt. They could not actually fully pay out all the policies they had in force for the premiums they were taking in. And then meanwhile, existing policies that are being under, and in some states are legal outlaws or various very tight rules on it, but those premiums are high, and the benefit payouts are usually capped at a couple hundred thousand dollars in terms of total benefit. So I imagine that that's putting a lot of pressure on that.
Exactly. No, it definitely is. It definitely is. But, you know, I believe the estimate is about 40% of people underestimate the cost of care. So people just are not understanding that even if you have allotted a certain nest egg, maybe you are coming into retirement with $600,000, upwards of $1 million, that can go very, very quickly. So it's really important for people to plan early and plan often, as I say, because, you know, if you want to live in your home till you pass, that's something that can happen. But you have to make choices. You have to decide, okay, do I want to have my life extended by any way, means necessary, or am I okay with an earlier exit? Do I have family members that will take care of me, or should I be planning on those high costs of, you know, anywhere from 92,000 if I'm in a facility to, it can get up to where it's 200,000 a year if you have caregivers around the clock in your home. So that really changes people's financial picture when they start to look at, okay, what happens after the golden years of retirement in Florida and my time in the sun? What happens
actually
need to help?
Well, and things I imagine, like even as I look, like I said, my parents aging and going, huh, well, here's a steep set of stairs, and this is fine for them to negotiate now. How is this going to be in another 10 years? And do you retrofit the home or are you looking at a potential move at some point? You know, mm-hmm. That's a big deal. You know, my parents, for example, have been in that home 30, you know, and going on 25 years at the 26 years at this point. So that's a long time to be there. And that's obviously a pretty big change.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I just want to share a couple of resources for people about that actual planning process, because we're kind of talking about the need, but I want to be sure people have resources. So,
fantastic.
And I'm sure you'll add this in the links, but I have a YouTube channel that I put videos out twice a month on these kinds of topics. So how to think about safety in the home, how to have these conversations, how to find a nursing home, hire a caregiver, all those things are on my YouTube channel. And the other thing that I have is what's called a roadmap to successful aging that you can use to sort of checklist these things. What do I need for my parents if they are in retirement? What should we be looking at? If they're starting to have chronic illness, what should we be prepared for? And end of life, what do we need to have in place? So those resources are available. You can subscribe to my YouTube channel. And if people get in touch, I'm happy to share that roadmap to aging.
That's terrific. Now, as we speaking of topics and the numbers, you know, many homes are going to be very financially challenged. I mean, 23% of seniors have $100,000 or more saved up for retirement, which means 77% do not. Mm-hmm. And that's a gap that seems to only be continuing to widen, which is what it impresses on is a heavy reliance on Social Security, which is, you know, in most cases, in many cases, is not enough of a loan to just live on. That's a tough ask in this environment, especially if you have those other services that you're talking about. But thinking about, you know, regardless kind of a financial situation, watching the numbers and budgeting become increasingly important so that, you know, even if you do have retirement savings, that, you know, does as much as it needs to be able to do. What are some common areas people overlook or really don't think about when it comes to what they're spending on and where money can just kind of disappear at that time of life?
Goodness. Well, food is one.
Okay.
I've sat down with a lot of food and cable.
I'm sure. No. See, we aren't talking about millennials. We're talking about their parents.
Yep. We're still talking about those folks. Food and cable. More than millennials on the cable. Like, these bills are upwards of $300 a month, and people half of what they're using. On the food front, I found that a lot of seniors are trying to just buy food as they need it, and rather than having like a grocery budget and a list, and maybe use something like Instacart or some of the new services that are available to get safely to and from the grocery store and have their food delivered regularly. I think Instacart is really a brilliant support tool for older adults. Because especially in a place like Chicago, where we have winter 9 months out of the year, it can be pretty dangerous to try and get to and from the store, and you don't get as much as you want. I had a client who lived right next to a Mariano's, but preferred to shop at an Aldi. So her grocery bill.
And to clarify for listeners, if you're not regional, Mariano's is owned by Kroger. So think Kroger store, but more regional in scope. Here's like. At least you have an idea, a grocer, but go ahead.
And more fancy. Mariano's is a little fancier than most of the Kroger's I've been to.
Sure.
But price-wise, an Aldi or a budget grocery retailer is a place that, you can save a lot of money on food. Whereas if you're going to what's convenient because it's harder for you to get around, you can triple your budget in that way. But I don't think it's all that much different for older adults than it is for the kids, or for millennials, or for folks our age. Really watching the numbers, that's what gets away from people. You're on a fixed income. It is important. It is more important than ever to have that budget, because you're not bringing money in. So you have to work with what you have.
Well, and I imagine routines and habits and kind of maintaining those things is a part of managing the overall lifestyle at that point in time, right?
It is. And I want to share just one tip for folks, because, the biggest issue that I see around financial management is not having these conversations and the adult children not stepping in when you're seeing signs of memory loss.
Okay.
So that's the biggest way for your aging loved one to get in trouble, is not paying their taxes, not paying their bills, being overwhelmed by their mail. If you're seeing any signs of memory loss, like if your loved one is repeating themselves, if they are asking you things numerous times, if they haven't changed their clothes in a few days or a few weeks, like, pay attention to those. Don't ignore them. See what's going on with the finances, because they could be getting in real trouble if they aren't able to manage that anymore.
Well, and a corollary to that idea, one of the things I hammer on when I'm doing presentations on Social Security, for example, is the idea that seniors and the elderly are the target of a heavy amount of financial fraud. That, for example, if we look at what is the home burglary industry in the United States and its size, an estimated $3 billion worth of stuff is stolen out of people's homes every year. And yet, if we look at, what's the financial damage towards seniors when it comes to financial fraud, and being taken advantage of, the FBI reported last year that was a $37 billion industry. So you think about all the things we do with Ring doorbells and cameras and all those things we see, and that's not even a tenth of what our parents are potentially facing regarding various forms of financial fraud that can absolutely wreck, like I said, these sort of golden years. From what you've seen, what are some of the ways, most common ways, or some of the biggest problems that you see in that sort of space that you come across and discover talking with families?
Well, the fraud and the scams, more often than not, are about loneliness and isolation. It's about the person wanting to be needed, wanting to feel useful, maybe wanting to do something for their family or leave a legacy by winning big. I've definitely heard stories, and in my own family, my grandfather actually was a victim of scammers, and he's kept talking to them and kept trying to win these games because he was lonely, and he was like, eventually it got to the point where the scammers were telling him, oh, I need to put a new roof on my house and you should send money to help me with that. And, you know, this is a system. These people know what they're doing. So I think the best thing that we can do in terms of having a different kind of talk with our parents is educate them about these scams. Make sure that you're actually talking with them about, please do not give out your personal information. You know, if you are ever in a situation where you're unsure, call me. You know, having that talk is just as important as some of the other ones, because you're right, it's a huge industry. And there's very little that can be done about it from a legal perspective in terms of prosecuting scammers. It feels very unjust at the moment.
It's just incredible to me. And it, you know, when you see people lose their entire retirement savings, that's the, you know, body of their work over their career. And now, instead of having the nursing experience or having the availability to care, you either see people going back to work in their 70s or beyond, or are just having to live very differently and perhaps not remotely what they earned, because they watched that, whether it went to an insurance scam, you know, scam or a game or you know, fraudulent email, phone call, or even, unfortunately, our family members end up potentially being the people committing this type of fraud. Mm-hmm. These are all things that we have to kind of we got to be on the lookout for, because as our parents age, it becomes more challenging for them to detect the difference between what that discernible information is and what is fake news or fake financial information, and ends up coming back to bite them.
Absolutely, absolutely. I just think it's so critical for people to be on the lookout with their folks, you know, really not shy away from having those conversations and from asking probing questions, you know, because a lot of it is about, part of, I think, our job as the adult children is to put ourselves in our parents' shoes. You know, if your parent is feeling isolated, they're not going to work, their world is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And so that's why it's so important to recognize if they're getting scammed, it's not because they don't care about their money or they don't care about leaving it for their family. It's because they're lonely or because they think that they can, you know, they really have a chance of winning, or, you know, their short-term memory loss is kind of impairing their judgment. So, you know, with money, we oftentimes come from a place of blame and fear, and it's important to just continue to keep your emotions in check when you're having those conversations.
That's terrific advice. As, you know, shifting a gear a little bit here, you know, along the same lines, though, of at least the financial tightness on things, you talked about money, you know, money involving food and about cable and some of these expenses. Are there resources available that provide, you know, free or reduced cost services that might be able to, you know, help things out at least a little bit, where, you know, at least we can take advantage of, whether it's savings in terms of labor or savings in terms of money, being able to help our parents out in those sorts of ways?
Well, I could go on and on forever about that topic. I'll try to simplify.
Sure.
Anywhere in the country, what I would recommend is getting in touch with the local area agency on aging. Those are government-funded, typically senior centers and senior programming, but they have fantastic resource lists that can point you in the right direction, and they're used to seeing a lot of folks on a budget. So if you're in, I don't care if you're in a rural area or in a city area, you can get connected to your area agency on aging. And that's what I'd recommend as the starting point for some of these resources.
And I'll interrupt real quick before you go on that and say, you know, for example, at least in Illinois, Illinois actually has its own department for adult aging, but it is also an enforcement department for financial fraud. So if you have a fraud case, yes, the local police can be involved, But if you're not sure or you want someone that specializes in that area, Illinois State Agency actually coordinates with the FBI, with state police, with local law enforcement on those types of cases. So if you think your parents are being targeted with something going on there, and I imagine most other state agencies are set up in a similar fashion where they can actually coordinate with local authorities to try to help those types of situations as well. But what other resources apart from that would you also recommend?
A hugely underutilized one is the veterans benefits. Mm. So the veteran system is extensive and amazing. You can get here if you qualify, there's a wonderful program called Aid in Attendance that will pay for caregiver services in your home.
Oh wow.
Pay for homemaker services. It covers the majority of your medications and medical care. I mean, the veterans benefits are just, it's a huge, huge source of support for folks. They even have, you know, veterans pensions if you qualify. So I think a lot of people leave money on the table in that way. And whether say your dad was a veteran, your mom might still qualify even if your dad has passed. So it's that typically takes, you know, 2 to 3 months to get approval on, but then you have those benefits for the rest of your life. And then at that point, unless you have long-term care, which, like I said, is a great service to be able to cut my costs, it's time to call somebody like me. It's time to call a care plan or a care manager because they'll be able to tell you in your local area what's happening. And you can have a one-time consultation to say, this is what we're concerned about. This is how much money they have. And we know that it's only going to cover so much. What are the subsidized services in our area, or how can we think about this and plan to keep mom or dad at home for as long as we can and use their resources wisely.
To that end, what is the, you know, you say there are a number of, you know, times where you've mentioned that there are some spots where you'd be able to have like a one-time consultation for this or for that topical reason, but what is the benefit of having a long-term relationship with someone in, you know, with a care manager, with someone like you in their life? Like what are some of the primary benefits you see from that?
The primary benefit is avoiding crises, you know, and staying in the loop and decreasing anxiety. So for most folks, you don't quite know what you're looking for when your loved one's in a nursing home. You don't necessarily know what quality care looks like or how to avoid hospitalizations. You know, the benefit, huge benefit of what we do is ongoing. We can have regular visits. We can take your loved one to doctor's appointments. We can, you know, help them with paying their bills. So there's a lot of ways in which having a care manager, we really act as the boots on the ground. You know, it's not a caregiver because caregivers don't have the training to do all of those things. They're typically just help within the home with housekeeping and meal preparation and things like that. We're a few steps above in terms of expertise and, you know, managing the process. So rather than trying to get time off or FMLA or lose out on money that you need to make for your family, you can have mom or dad hire a care manager to relieve some of that stress.
Now, how often do you typically meet with, if you have an ongoing relationship with a family, for example, how often do you meet to review what the current care plan is, or how does that relationship kind of evolve over time?
Well, much as you know, one of the beauties of being an entrepreneur is you get to do the right thing at the right time. So, you know, we are not formulaic. I have about 10 different types of assessments that we do, not just one. And so with each family, it's a little different. You know, I'll give you a few examples. I have a client who we started with when, after she had had bilateral strokes, she became paralyzed. And she ended up in a subpar nursing home, even though she had plenty of resources financially. And so the family hired us to get her into a better nursing home. We did that. And then we've stayed on for the last 3 years. We visit her every week. We brought caregivers in so that she could go to music programs because she was in 3 different choirs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we coordinate the care. We talk with her doctors, take her to her appointments. And that's just a huge relief on the family's end. So we talk to the family, you know, we give them updates on a weekly basis about what's happening, but then we'll have those big conversations when we see a transition, you know, when we see something changing. And again, our people know what to look for. You know, if somebody's starting to eat less, or if their skin is starting to break down, or, you know, all those nitty gritty things that most folks don't like to think about, that's what we're on the lookout for.
That's terrific. And that's, you know, especially because most of us don't know what to even look for in that regard. And to have people whose literally their job is to track and follow and plan well ahead, and anticipate those needs, that be an extraordinary burden on to take off of the family and be able to, and that doesn't mean that the people you work with aren't absolutely engaged in what their parents are doing, but it takes a lot of the, at least it puts the most prudent options the most easily in front of you to be able to make a decision. And instead of being, it's like going to the store and having 16 different types of jam to look at, and you're looking at each bottle and price and comparing, you're going, we've already shopped for you. And here are three very clear action plans that align with what you've already told us your values and priorities and maybe budget and needs are. And this is what lines up best. Is that a fair way of kind of breaking it down?
That's absolutely a fair way of breaking it down. And I think another way that I would describe it is you get to be the kid. You don't have to be the project manager if we're involved. You know, sure. You can spend your time having dinner or seeing a movie or just talking instead of rushing from place to place and being frustrated about everything that you have to do.
Yeah, I mean, I remember relatively recently, my mom cared for my grandmother quite a bit, probably 15 years or more there since that, basically from college until my grandmother passed. And, you know, it was a lot of stress in terms of from doing laundry for grandma to, you know, regular doctor's visits and having to transport everything to eventually transitioning to nursing care. And every single step, my mom provided incredible amounts of labor and God bless her for doing it, because the resources weren't there, you know, to do anything otherwise. But at the same time, if a resource like this had been around to help her out, she would, you know, what stresses could have been taken off, and that energy going back into just, yeah, as you just said, enjoying time with your parents is just, it's immeasurable. What value do you put on that?
Absolutely. And I think these things are so personal, and when something happens, you don't have time to really feel the emotions. You don't have time to feel that loss or even reflect, because you're so busy doing things. And so it's an incredibly stressful situation. And just to have somebody say, you're on the right track, you're doing what you can, you know, this is what your parents said, so what you're doing is in line with that. You know, just having some moral support on that, that's a huge piece for our families that I know they appreciate.
It's just incredible what you've built up here over the first three of you know, many years of the care plan. What is good contact information for you if people want to reach out, get in touch, and start having those conversations with you?
The best contact information for me is Jacqueline@the-care-plan.com. Or you can call me at 630-479-0083. Find us on the web. We're very active on social media. And I would encourage people, if you're thinking about this for your parents, to subscribe to our YouTube channel. That'll give you all the information that you need to know in 3 to 5 minute tidbits.
Awesome. Well, Jacqueline, thank you so much for being on Money Is, I would say being on the show today, Money Is Personal. I greatly appreciate you being here. Jacqueline Boyd, owner and founder of The Care Plan. Again, thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you, Steve. You take care.
All right. Thank you so much. And so just real quick before we close off here, remember that we're here every week. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Player FM, and of course the Briggs Financial website at BriggsWealth.com. Please make sure to subscribe to the podcast. And if you're already a subscriber, consider writing a review on iTunes. It helps promote the podcast and get this free and terrific information into more people's hands, or in our earbuds, so to speak. So we appreciate you audience members for doing that. And with that, Have a terrific week. We'll see you next week with another fresh episode. And take care, everyone. Have a good one. Thank you for listening to Money is Personal, the Briggs Financial Podcast. Please follow Briggs Financial on Instagram and Facebook for more terrific personal financial stories and ideas. And check out our firm's website at www.briggswealth.com to schedule a free consultation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. This information is provided for informational and educational purposes only. Briggs Financial believes the information has been obtained from sources considered to be reliable, but does not guarantee the accuracy of the information being provided. This information is not meant to be a complete summary or statement of all available data necessary for making financial or investment decisions and does not constitute a recommendation. Please note that the information provided may include references to concepts that have legal, accounting, and tax implications. It is not to be construed as legal, accounting, or tax advice, and is provided as general information to you to assist in understanding the issues discussed. Briggs Financial does not give tax, legal, or accounting advice. This information is not meant as financial or investment advice pertaining to your personal situation. The selection of appropriate investment or planning options and or strategies should be made on an individual basis after consultation with appropriate legal, tax, or financial advisors. Nothing contained herein is intended as a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any product or service mentioned, and they may not be suitable for all investors.